Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through it. A man was there named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. He was trying to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not because he was short in stature. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore tree to see him because Jesus was going to pass that way. When Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today." So he hurried down and was happy to welcome him. All who saw it began to grumble and say, "He has gone to be the guest of one who is a sinner." Zacchaeus stood there and said to the Lord, "Look, half of my possessions, Lord, I will give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I will pay back four times as much." And Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because he too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek out and to save the lost." The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Years ago, we took the tour bus through downtown Jericho. It's not far from the Dead Sea, and some of it hasn't changed very much at all over the centuries. Over here, there was an open marketplace with two of the locals squabbling over the price of figs. Over here, there was a public square with a camel, along with an enterprising photographer who would snap a picture of you if you paid a modest fee. And then the tour guide at the front of the bus picked up the microphone and said, "And right up here, in the very next block, we will pass the actual sycamore tree that Zacchaeus climbed to see Jesus." Everybody laughed, because if you've ever been on a tour of ancient places, you know that there's often a good bit of invented nonsense given to please the tourists. The real tree, it's long gone. But everybody looked out the window because we love the story of Zacchaeus. It's as relevant as ever. And for the moment, it was quite a thrill to the imagination. Why, this is the town. This is the street. The place where Jesus invited himself to the home of the most famous tax collector in all the Bible. He looked up into that tree and said, "Come on down, Zacchaeus. I'm eating dinner at your home tonight, and I'm spending the night." Now, the kids generally like the story because it sounds like Zacchaeus is kind of short, just like some of them. But I will point out that the grammar is actually ambiguous. We're not sure if Zacchaeus is the short one or if it's Jesus. Listen to the sentence again. "He was trying to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not because he was short in stature." Which one of them is the short one? Maybe Jesus was 4'11". The grammar is not clear. But lest you chase that spare thought down the wrong alley, let me say that what is clear is the impact of the story. Zacchaeus changes his life. Not only does Jesus intrude on him with the same intrusive grace that Luke has been narrating for 19 chapters, but Zacchaeus now responds. He makes a big dramatic change. "Look, Lord," he says, "I will give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I've defrauded anyone, I will repay them fourfold." Now that is an unusual moment. Jesus has been changing lives by preaching and teaching and healing and feeding the multitudes, But ever since his mother Mary first said yes to the angel, there hasn't been a lot of evidence in this book that people have actually done something in response to his ministry. They've talked about his stories, argued about them, they've reacted to his teachings, they've benefited from his healings, but that one of them should actually then make a change in his life, well, that's pretty rare in the Gospel of Luke. As you may recall, he has been with tax collectors before. Some of them have followed after him. Others have hosted him for dinner. As we heard last week, one tax collector even appears as the hero of one of his stories. But that a tax collector then should make a change, specifically a financial donation, why, that is an unprecedented response to the work of Jesus. Especially given who the tax collectors were in that time and in that place. We have at least one elected tax collector in our congregation. Did you know that? The tax collector for Clark's Green worships here. We also have a couple of retired IRS agents, the kind you'd never want to have knock on your door. But they are nothing like the ancient tax collectors of Israel. Zacchaeus and his bunch were actually Jewish citizens who sold out to the Roman Empire. Their job was to collect for the Romans whatever it took for the Roman soldiers to occupy their land. And as an additional incentive, they could collect whatever additional fees they could get away with. If the local Roman soldiers were friendly, they could back them up and then split the additional proceeds. And that would have been particularly true in an isolated border town like Jericho, way off in the desert. So we know two things about New Testament tax collectors. Most of them lived in luxury. Imagine that. They drove Beamer camels. And all of them were hated by the neighbors in their towns. It got so bad over the time of Jesus that leaders in the Jerusalem temple kept a list of despised trades. These are people who were not welcome to worship with the rest of God's people, and tax collectors were always at the top of the list. So what does it mean that Zacchaeus wanted to see Jesus? What does it mean that he was willing to climb a tree and risk the embarrassment of being spotted by a crowd of neighbors who hated him? What does it mean that he was happy to welcome Jesus? That's what it says. He's the happy tax collector. Literally, he was rejoicing exceedingly. That's the same verb as the shepherd who rejoices when he finds the lost lamb and carries it home on his shoulders. Except that at this time, it's the lost lamb who rejoices when the good shepherd finds him and calls him by name. Zacchaeus, hurry and come down. I must stay at your home today. The guy whose job had excluded him and caused him to be hated by others is now wanted and named and visited by the Christ of grace. No wonder we love this story. It's a story that lies at the heart of what the good news of Jesus is really all about. And it's a story that keeps getting told in every generation by others among us who find themselves wanted, named, and visited. I've just started reading the memoir of a man named Brennan Manning. Have you ever heard of him? He has really some kind of tangled story. He heard the call of God and was ordained as a Catholic priest. He was a former Marine, had served in the Korean War, but he found out pretty soon that presiding over a congregation never really floated his boat. served for a while and said, "Is this all there is?" So Father Manning joined the Franciscan order, put on a brown robe, took a vow of poverty, and went wherever his abbot directed him. So for about 6 months, he was serving the poor in Spain. He lived in a cave. And then he worked as a campus minister in Ohio. He said it was kind of like the same experience. And he kept asking, "Is this all there is?" The loneliness empowered him or weakened him to slip into alcoholism. He left the priesthood, decided to dry out. Then he married a woman and moved to New Orleans. And the people he'd known really wanted nothing to do with him. His family called him a failure. But in the thick of it all, he said, "I discovered the love of Jesus. It had been there all along, but I had ignored it in the name of mere religion." He had served the church, and in his variety of church, he found it to be congregations full of folks obsessed by guilt. And the way they worked out their own guilt was by imposing more guilt on other people. And nobody ever really measured up. He said, "It is absolute complete nonsense. Did Jesus die for nothing? And did he come back from the dead in order to make people feel guilty?" So he's recovering from alcohol and discovers the love of Jesus. "I was pursued until I was found," he said. Indeed, that didn't even fix everything. But he began to speak wherever anybody wanted to hear about the love of Jesus. He wrote books that were bestsellers, even though he had two more lapses into alcoholism and later divorced from his wife. But he kept talking about the love of Jesus. He kept making amends where he could. And in one surprising turn, his ex-wife decided to run the office to get him out and booking him on his speaking trips. I think she wanted to get him out of town, but she was helping him out. And in a very strange twist, a number of years ago, he was booked to speak at a church very close to this one, which I will not name. And when the church leaders discovered what a mess his life had been, they uninvited him. They said he wasn't spiritual enough, that he wasn't a good example. And Brennan Manning didn't care. He said, "There must be more to all this than what he called moralistic religiosity." And he kept writing books and talking about the love of Jesus. And when he passed away 3 years ago, he was traveling widely, still speaking, but traveling with a back brace, a catheter, and an IV bag, with the simple message that Jesus loves you. As he put it, "My work, the work God has given me to do, is helping people to enter the experience of being loved in their brokenness." It's found. Loved by Christ. And he did something about it. That's why my friends and I were looking out the bus window when we're going down the street in Jericho. Because it's a place to mark where somebody had been found and loved by Christ. And then he did something about it. Zacchaeus said, "Lord, half my possessions I give to the poor. If I've defrauded anybody, I will restore it fourfold." Now look, I didn't want to point out that today is the day we make stewardship pledges to support the work of this church. I'm going to leave that for one of our elders to do in a couple of minutes. Because I don't want to reduce the abundant love of Christ to mere fundraising. We were not baptized primarily to pay the light bill and meet the budget. No, we were baptized in the love of God to proclaim the love of God to the world. It's that big. And even if our lives have been busted along the way or shipwrecked here or there, it is here in the community of Christ where we proclaim that there is something more. We are found, we are named, we are visited, and we are invited to change to become more like Jesus. So let me say a word about what that meant for Zacchaeus before we explore what that might mean for you or me. Zacchaeus is called by Jesus a child of Abraham. That meant he was circumcised into the law of Moses. The Torah was given by God to give guidance for his life. But Zacchaeus decided that getting rich and selling out his neighbors was more important than the gift of God's love for his life. Even when he knew what the word said, live honestly, don't defraud, be generous with what you have. He knew somewhere deep inside him there was indeed something more. And then one day that something more, the word of God on two legs, walks up to his tree, looks up at him, calls him by name, and invites himself for dinner. Luke says he hurried down because he was glad to welcome him. And the gladness, I believe, comes because he was free from having to live a divided life. You know, the kind of life where Sunday has nothing to do with Monday, and Monday has nothing to do with Sunday. No longer divided, the love of God found him. He was always, and now he was renewed as a child of Abraham. And here we are, the adopted children of Abraham, claimed by the same love and grace that saved and restored Zacchaeus' life. And it's time for you and for me to do something about it. So, if you want to pitch in for the heat bill and last week's bell anthem, have at it. The church needs that. But I'd like to think we're capable of so much more. I was reading Calvin, always probably a risky thing before I preach to you. John Calvin says, God has given the earth and its resources to human beings. As children in the image of God, we're called to share our resources and serve one another. And he felt so strongly about this that he went on to write that a person is defrauded when a need is left unmet by someone with the power to meet it. So here's what Zacchaeus writes on his pledge card today, the pledge card we left for him right there in the pew holder. He writes, I'm not ever going to defraud anybody. No, I'm going to be about the work of restoration through my generosity. And he makes that promise because he is confident of the love of God through Jesus, the one he calls Lord. But enough talk. It's time to do something. And I want to do what Zacchaeus did, to commit myself to the work of God's love through my own generosity. How about you?